illustration is connected, related with our topic, Taming the Drunken Elephant. It shows an individual like us going towards the enlightenment from the ordinary level. With ordinary level means an individual with all three poisons, or five poisons, we call. The poisons are desire, anger, ignorance, jealousy, proud, or pride, or arrogance, maybe. Because we use the pride a lot, or proud a lot. And it doesn't sound like negative, because we often say, I'm proud of this and that. So maybe the better word is arrogance, in this case. Our mind is so scattered on one side. Scattered because it's hyperactive. Subconsciously, it's very active. But at the same time, is fragmented. Active in different ways, but not getting a whole picture, whole focus. So that's a problem. That's why we cannot concentrate. We cannot really give time ourselves to think on one thing until you get to a result, until you get the full understanding of that. Because you just start and leave somewhere, and you start that. So in order to gain the mastery of that particular subject, you have to gain mastery of your mind first. So to gain the mastery of your mind, we need to tame our mind. So that's why we have title as Taming the Drunken Elephant. An elephant is used as a example or illustration of mind, because elephant, if it wants, is so powerful. If it uses its power, it's so powerful. At the same time, it can be very stable and peaceful, but it can also go very wrong. Totally wrong and destroy everything. So that's why here, in this case, the elephant is the symbol of mind. Mind is very powerful. It can be very destructive, but it can also be very stable. How do you tame that drunken elephant? Drunken elephant, obviously, will destroy. It has a very high chance to destroy lots of things. Why it's drunken? What are the things that drunken our mind? Three poisons. Ignorance, desire, and anger. So, on that illustration, you will see someone using lasso and hooks is controlling or taming the elephant. And when you know the skill, when you have the skill how to control, how to tame an elephant, you can tame it. Elephant is so big. How many size of human being it is? Many times. And so powerful. Yet, a human being, relatively very small to the elephant, can tame the elephant and use the elephant to carry things, to travel, to protect oneself from other beasts. So when you have the skill, Now, the skill is what we're talking about in meditation. Obviously, first two important thing is mindfulness and awareness. Mindfulness and awareness. They're very similar, but different. That lasso on the illustration is a symbol of our mindfulness. And the hook that person carried to train the elephant is the symbol of our awareness. If we know how to use, and not only how to use, but when to use the awareness, it will be very effective. I often suggest to use the awareness within the first 3 seconds. First 3 seconds of the emotion or whatever problem that you notice. The difference between awareness and mindfulness, in this case, is knowing, remembering past and knowing present. Remembering past teachings, trainings that you got, meditation experience that you had from the past, bringing it to the, you know, bring it to, connecting that with present situation, that's the mindfulness. Awareness is knowing the present situation. If you want to, in a practical way, in real practice, what will happen is, if you try to use mindfulness first, it could work, but it may not work because our emotion can be so strong, it would burst and we lose our senses. So remembering teachings at that moment is not easy when the emotion comes up and it bursts. We won't give, somehow our feeling won't, our emotion won't give a chance for us to remember and recall those teachings and to implement at the time. That's quite difficult. So, awareness. Awareness is, that's why, very effective, I think, because awareness doesn't require a lot of time or thinking. You don't need logic. You don't need reasoning. Awareness is awareness. It's instinct. Just know. If you know anger is here now, then it's awareness. You have awareness already. When the anger comes, within 3 seconds, if you know, oh, the poison of anger is entering me, then you have, you're already aware. Instead of thinking other reasons like, oh, you know, anger comes from ignorance, or anger is because of misunderstanding, or those are not so, for some people could be effective, but generally speaking, because of the time limit that we have, we don't have much time, these things may not work that effectively because we don't want to do these things. We don't want to reason at the time. Emotion wins our reasoning. That's why when the emotion comes, we lose our senses. When we lose our senses, we don't have reasoning. We don't have judgment. But if you put a little bit effort to let the awareness arise at the same time, because you don't need much effort for the awareness, it's easier for us. Once awareness slip in on that emotion built up process, then you will get chance because your emotion becomes hollow. It's big, but hollow. Once it becomes hollow, then it reduces. And meanwhile, you may be able to recall the teachings and other things. And there are many other options. You know, then if there is a willingness at the time and the logics come in, and you reason yourself, then it supports the awareness, and then emotion become less problem. So then hook is the awareness. Now, when you tame the elephant, you need a lasso or big rope that ties an elephant. But you need to tie it to some strong objects, like pillar. Right? If you hold it, they'll just drag you wherever it wants to go. You cannot hold it back. So that's why. That pillar where you tie the elephant to is the object of our concentration. So we meditate. When we meditate, we need object of meditation, such as our breath, such as a picture of Buddha, such as sound of mantra. These are the objects of mantra. These are just few examples. Now, when you have these objects, you are training your mind to engage with that object and only with that object, nothing else. In a way, your mind is tied to that object. Now, elephant, that drunken elephant, is tied with the rope to that pillar. You will see a monkey on that map illustration. And they change color as they proceed forward. First, they are black elephant and black monkey. Black elephant, that blackness represents the drowsiness or the laziness, dullness of the mind. When we do the meditation, often we fall asleep. That's because of our dullness of the mind. Or, it's either or often. Either we fall asleep or we think a lot. Past, future, what after this meditation, and so on. So that's the active part of the mind. Active is good, but active is not good when it's out of control. And that monkey is out of control activeness. It's an agitated mind. So with the meditation, we basically train our mind in the shamatha. Now we're talking about shamatha meditation. There's a scale. Those two are the on the two extreme. The right meditation is a balance of these two things. That gap right in the middle, the gap between the dullness or drowsiness of mind and agitated mind, it's where you can get the shamatha. Shamatha has two parts. Shama, stop. Shama means calm, peaceful. Sta means being, abiding somewhere. So it's calm, abiding. Translated as calm, abiding. But this calm doesn't mean just calm because you're tranquilized. It's not that kind of calm. But it's other kind of calm. Calm actually means undistracted. Your mind is undistracted by the external objects. Your senses are not distracted by the external objects. External objects basically means forms, okay, beautiful form, beauty or ugliness. Sound is another object. Good words, bad words, quiet or noisy, noisiness. You're not distracted. Smell, good smell, bad smell. Taste. Touch, feeling. You're not distracted. Maybe at the during time of, you can say, yeah, I won't be distracted by, maybe by smell, maybe by sound, maybe by vision, but I can close my eye and I won't see these things and I won't be distracted. And I won't be distracted by touch or taste because I won't be eating anything at the time or, you know, touching anything or anyone at the moment. But these objects, of course, the gross objects are out there. These are the objects of our five senses, like, okay, different faculties of our senses. But at the same time, there's a picture of all these five things. The mental image that can come to you right into your meditation. Even you close your eye, you can see white, red, and car, and house, and friends, and you can travel, right? The physical image and mental image both can distract us during meditation. So shama means not being distracted by these things, so it's calm. Stop means, okay, now mind is inward, looking at mind itself and being there, or being on your objects, whatever you are visualizing at the time. If you are concentrating on a light, that is being on that light, nothing else. That is shamatha. Elephant, taming elephant examples appears in different Buddhist teachings. In Kamala Shila's three books, he didn't, he actually particularly mentioned in the second book. They're very clear about this. Kamala Shila, in all three books, he emphasized very much on the compassion. Start from compassion, that's what he said. And compassion towards sentient beings, people or sentient beings that you know or you don't know, or that even at the end, try to meditate compassion towards the enemies. So that's equanimity is very important in Buddhist practice. Sometimes some masters start meditation with equanimity sometimes, because everyone is equal. Equal that their nature is good. Equal that everyone wants to be better. Equal that everybody wants to be loved. Right? So because even the enemy is a person who wants to be loved. So from that point of view, equanimity can break that dislike, strong dislike towards the enemy first. So you equalize first, and then it's easier for us sometimes to do the loving kindness or compassion meditation. For a moment, we forget about whether this person deserves compassion or not. It's not about deserving or not. It's more about whether they are in need of compassion or not. So you look from that angle. then we can cultivate a more and more genuine compassion mind. Compassion mind is the seed, but it's easier for us to with loving kindness first. What is different between loving kindness and compassion? From Buddha's point of view, they're very close. It's like two sides of a coin, but they are different. The difference is their focus. If you wish somebody not suffer, you understand their suffering, okay, or their pain, or their difficulties, you wish, and you're thinking your best, what way you can help to get this person out of that situation. That is compassion. Okay. If you're not jealous, but you really rejoice about somebody's success, somebody who's happy, doing good, and wishing this person to have the same thing, wishing this person to have the same thing is loving kindness. Or that poor person, if you, instead of focusing not having the negative things, if you focus on having positive things on this person, that is loving kindness. If you wish, okay, minus negative is compassion, plus positive is loving kindness. So if you wish this person be happy, that's loving kindness. If you wish this person don't suffer anymore, that's compassion. So it is said that for us it's easier to start with loving kindness first. So that's why in the Mahayana Buddhist meditation, remember earlier I said there's a four purposes: enhance your concentration, cultivate your positive emotion. So now we're talking cultivate positive emotions. Usually they meditate on the four immeasurables: loving kindness, compassion, equanimity, and sympathetic joy. So meditating on these four. Immeasurable because eventually immeasurable. In the sense that first you start with somebody with whom you can do easier, you know, do these things easier. Then you expand for your whole family and their friends and then community, and then you expand the whole world, the universe. So when you can think of all sentient beings, when you don't exclude, it's hard to say to include all sentient beings, right? Because you don't know. But the key point is you don't exclude even one person or one sentient beings. That is immeasurable. Because we don't know how many are there, how many sentient beings are there. But we know if we exclude somebody knowingly, then it's not infinite. When one can meditate on loving kindness and compassion without excluding even one sentient being, then that is immeasurable loving kindness meditation. Effort is actually one of the, I don't know where is the illustration now, but effort is something necessary at the beginning and unnecessary or a disturbance if it's at the end. And this we find in many places in Buddhist teachings. For example, even Buddha's activities are effortless. But when Buddha first practiced as an ordinary being, have to put lots of efforts. That's why they practice on six paramitas and take bodhisattva vow. These are all part of their effort. But at the end, the example they give is like, what do you call that, you know? You turn a wheel and you make clay pot, right? So you put lots of effort to turn it first. After some time, it turns by itself. And then you can change the clay pot and cut it and so on. So it becomes effortless after. It's a spontaneous meditation. But one thing I want to, you know, still make clear, not to force our mind. We cannot force our mind. If you force in a sense that stopping. If you stop mind here, it pops up somewhere else. You can try yourself. I often say, you know, we'll do meditation, but let's not think about monkey. Then what happened is, and then everybody think of a monkey. We can't help. Because they try to stop monkey. So it comes to mind. So if you try to stop something, it won't work. That's why what you said is true. You can't force that way. But you can channelize your mind. That's different. Okay. And channelizing needs effort. And that's what shamatha is. And it depends. At the beginning, you need effort. And after some time, you know, at the beginning, most of the time, you need effort. You need effort because it is not channelizing. And you try to channelize. And once it's in the channel, you don't need effort. If you put effort at the time, then it becomes an obstacle. When it's going right, let it be. No effort. Stopping mind, stopping certain thought, it's impossible. But instead of stopping these different thoughts, you can train your mind to focus on something. That is the shamatha's meditation, according to Buddhist tradition, especially the Kamalashila I'm talking about. And other schools and traditions also, such as there's shamatha instructions by Shantideva. So this is, it's a balance, basically, you know. It's a balance. And real meditation is the mind, it's not the body. Body just helps, it's a condition. So you don't have to worry about falling somewhere or hitting somewhere. You sit. You sit properly, comfortably. So when you don't have to worry, you have less things. You know, you can be more in the meditation. So let's move now. So compassion. We focus on compassion. And then bodhicitta, which means now you're doing meditation not only for oneself, but for greater benefits for all sentient beings, to bring them out of the ignorance, or to share their enlightenment with all sentient beings. So that's called venturing bodhicitta, wishing bodhicitta and venturing bodhicitta. You wish good thing for others. All sentient beings be enlightened. And now, wishing only is not enough. It's a wish. Once you have that intention, if you are honest, you do it, right? You put efforts to make it happen. So that's the venturing bodhicitta. And venturing bodhicitta involves post-meditation practice, such as practicing patience, generosity, and so on. And on the cushion, when you're on the cushion, those are off the cushion. But on the cushion, then you focus on your main focus of meditation is vipassana. But for vipassana, you need to have shamatha or calm abiding first. For the insight meditation, you need the calm abiding first. So with the calm abiding, you will set an environment for the mind, an environment for that insight. Like if the insight is the lamp, calm abiding is to protect it from all the wind coming from different directions. so that the lamp now can, without the wind, the lamp can glow. It can emit light. With the wind, you know, it will be flickering and there won't be really brightness. Right? So it's important to have the shamatha mind first. Sitting is one condition, sitting properly. Again, it has to be a middle way approach here. If it's uncomfortable when you sit, if you choose a very uncomfortable, like very tight clothes, for example, or very uncomfortable, you're trying to sit on a very rocky things, you won't be able to do for a long time. If it is too comfortable, it's also a problem. One may feel asleep after some time. So that's a problem. So middle way approach, comfortable, but not luxuriously comfortable. So that's why sitting properly involves sitting balanced and straight. Because if you lean on something when you do meditation, it's quite easy to fall asleep. And it depends. Every individual is different. Some people they find that they cannot meditate because they're thinking what to do next and what they did before. So some people, the moment they sit and start to meditate, and they fall asleep. So there's different techniques to overcome these things. But before that, you need to mentally prepare when you do meditation. First condition for good meditation is that you have this wish you want to do. That kind of wanting is very important. You have to be inspired to do the meditation. That's very important. And diligence is important. A regular meditation, even if it's a short time, it would be very helpful. So there are sometimes we don't want to do, right? We want to do, but we don't want to do, or we want to do tomorrow or after I finish my work. So it's to have a discipline, fix a time, maybe in the morning before anything happens. Even if it's a very short time, let's say 10 minutes, would be very helpful. Then you will build that good habit. That kind of discipline, it's possible if you have some diligence. A diligence that lasts long. Some people put a lot of diligence at the beginning and then it fades away. And that's not very helpful. So we just maintain that practice. And then contentment is important for meditation. Kamala Shila also focuses on this very much, contentment. People may say, oh, I need a better cushion, I'll do the meditation after I get the cushion. So for a week or 2 weeks, you cannot now meditate because of cushion. Or you cannot meditate because of your guest is there, after they leave, I'll do meditation. After I get a Buddha statue, I'll meditate. You find different excuses. So when you are content with what you have, in reality, your own body and your mind is good enough for meditation. You can do without meditation without having a Buddha statue, for example. Your body and your mind. You can do the Vipassana meditation, which basically means analytical meditation. Yeah, you analyze your whole body, all the five aggregates, which means the body, the collection of different parts of the body. collections of different feeling, collections of different discrimination of the mind, thinking that this is this and this is that, you know, thoughts. Consciousness, different consciousness, eye consciousness, ear consciousness, mental consciousness, all different kinds of consciousness. And then the grasping efforts to get those things, things that you want or reject other things, all those aggregates you can analyze. It's part of our body and mind. When you analyze these things, for example, where is my body? Do I have one body or many bodies? One. Am I one or many? Where is that one? And you analyze your different part of body from here to toe. So you analyze this way. Where is I? Is it in the body or out of the body? Is I my limbs, or limbs are I? You analyze this. Then you also analyze cause and effect. Where it is born, where it comes from. Then you analyze your emotions, feelings. If you think the body, okay, after analyzing so long, I don't really find I in my body. Could that be in my feeling now? Then you analyze your feeling. Okay, which feeling actually? There's no a big so-called feeling, except that there are many feelings at different times. Good feeling, bad feeling, physical feeling, mental feeling. Which one is it? If the good feeling is I, then what happened when we have bad feeling? Where is the I? Do you still have, if you have I, then that means, do you still have good feeling in the bad feeling? Or what's going on? So you analyze in depth, in consciousness again, mind. Which part of mind? Mind is not one thing. Is it eye consciousness, ear consciousness? Is it consciousness that is not thinking, or consciousness that is thinking, the thoughts? If thoughts, what thoughts? Yeah. And which moment of the thoughts? Yeah. So when you go into these depth and analyze, then you reach closer to understand the nature of oneself. So this is the Vipassana meditation. And this comes from listening teachings and thinking about teaching and doing analytical meditation. And you will reach to a stage where you come to an understanding of selflessness. But that is only understanding. It's only a wisdom that you gain from listening and contemplating. It's still a concept. Your understanding is still a concept. It's not, you're not seeing the selflessness directly. So when you reach that point, on that understanding, then you meditate. Just remain on that and meditate. And that is the higher level of the shamatha, vipassana meditation, which leads to the direct insight. Vipassana. During all this shamatha or vipassana meditation, one could have any of these obstacles, the faults of meditation. I have in that list, faults of meditation. usually we say five or sometimes six faults. Kamala Shila count as six faults, but they are same. Because when we say five faults, two of them are count together. Third and fourth are count together. Five faults are laziness or slothful, forgetful. Third one for Kamala Shila is drowsiness, and agitation is the fourth one. You count them together when you say five faults. And non-application means putting no effort is the fourth or fifth fault. Over-application is putting too much effort. So those are the faults. And for example, non-application fault is true only at the beginning or the up to the middle part. The over-application happens, that fault could happen only at the later part, and it never happens at the beginning. So wanting to do or being attracted by the quality of meditation, believing that meditation can help us, improve us, is one antidote to overcome these problems, such as the slothful. Determination to do the practice, putting effort, exertion, mindfulness, as I explained earlier, remembering the methods, teachings about meditation, when you do the meditation, awareness particularly means, in this case, during on the cushion, when you're on the cushion, awareness is to be aware of whether you are being now the victim of drowsiness or victim of agitated mind. You're aware. The moment you start to fall asleep like that, you know, then you're aware. Then you use all the methods. You recall the methods with your mindfulness and you apply those methods, such as if you're falling asleep, you try to open your eye and you try to keep your back straight. And if you have lots of heavy clothes, take them off. If you are sitting on a chair that has back support, of course, when you keep your back straight, you are not touching them. Or, stay away from the walls. So you can apply those methods. If you're meditating on a object, such as Buddha's statue, then you focus on the upper body of the Buddha, like his face, rather than the lower part of his body. On the other side, if your mind is so agitated, you really cannot do meditation, thinking lots of things, then you just do the opposite. Close your eye, go closer to the wall, more close. Lower your focus of concentration towards maybe lower part of Buddha's body. At the same time, those are more outer methods. Now there is one inner method, that is what you think. If your mind is so dull, then you think about the quality of the meditation, the benefits, or sometimes Kamala Shila also mentioned to think about Buddha's quality. If your mind is so agitated and cannot concentrate, then the way to overcome is to think about impermanence of death. When you think about impermanence, death, then you understand whatever you want to do, a lot of things, you plan something, you want to do something, you somehow, you understand these things will become meaningless. So your mind will be a little bit detached from these lots of planning, at least for the moment, which will be useful during the meditation. So that is Kamala Shila's method of doing meditation based on Mahayana's tradition. Again, he emphasized very much on having meditation together with the compassion and bodhisattva's practice, which means not only not doing negative things, but doing positive things for others, such as stealing is a negative thing, right? But giving things positive. Killing is negative, but saving life is positive. So bodhisattva focus very much on doing positive things. So not only doing meditation when you're on the cushion, but when you're out of the cushion, when you're engaging in the world, then do things, good things that helps, that is helpful for oneself and others. And that kind of intention of doing good thing should engage right before and after the meditation, each time when you come out of meditation and when you enter the meditation. So today is mainly on the theory of the meditation. We didn't plan to have any meditation itself, but you know, if anyone is coming, we are doing meditation tomorrow using these methods.